Welcome everyone to this new podcast about Geopolitical Report. I'm Joran Bifolky, your host and research manager at Special Eurasia. And today we have a distinguished guest, a friend, Catherine Rabe, VP and general manager at Mondo Internazionale and political and economic consultant at Minter Group. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Giuliano. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. How are you? How everything is going in the States?
Everything's good. Well, we obviously had quite a week. It was a big week, but let's say everything's good.
Yeah, we have Catherine because of the USA presidential election that, for a few people probably they don't know, Donald Trump won. And we want to know, thanks to Catherine and, you know, the situation also of the election campaigns and possible future developments. So my first question is if you can tell us, Catherine, your experience about all the presidential election campaigns, what you feel, also the narratives regarding the media coverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I actually just got back to the States on September 4th from Italy. So I had only been here for a couple of months by the time the election happened. But what I can tell you about those 2 months of experience, I'm going to try to stop myself because I know that part of my response is going to bleed into the second question that I'm expecting. But my experience was typical repetitive, obviously. So the same sort of information just being said again and again, no matter what outlet you were going on to, which really plays into the repetition bias. So the more that you hear something, the more that you're inclined to think that it's true. But I think that's common of every single election. What I noticed in this election, especially as we know, so I'm located in Ohio, which at least in the past was a swing state, but along with Florida, I don't think we can consider Ohio to be a swing state anymore because the Republicans absolutely swept the government, both in Ohio on a state level and at a federal level. And something that I think was distinguished this election and kind of goes into what we're going to talk about next about why we think Trump won, the different factors, is the fact that the Republicans, I think, had so much more success in this election, both on a federal level and here at the state level, because of the fact that they actually had a platform, as opposed to the Democrats, which I find did not have an inspiring enough platform. The Democrats wanted to rely upon basically exclusively being the alternative to Trumpism or the fact that they represent the people. Here in Ohio, we had a really big upset, actually. Senator Sherrod Brown, who's been in politics since 1975, who has been the state representative from Ohio in the Senate since 2007, which was more or less about the time that I started to actually start following politics. So basically throughout my entire memory of politics has been our state senator, was ousted by a Trump-supported businessman, a very young Trump-supported businessman named Bernie Moreno, who based his entire campaign upon mainly reproductive issues. So being 100% pro-life in all situations, being, for example, anti-transgender people in other bathrooms, et cetera, et cetera. So he based his platform on that. Whereas to give you an example that goes outside of the federal election, the presidential election, Sherrod Brown, who's been in politics basically since a lot of us had been born, was unsuccessful in this election for the first time in years because he only put himself, I believe, as an alternative to a Trump-supported candidate. So this was and also tried to come off as someone very relatable, for example, showing that he participated in his church choir. But unfortunately for him, it didn't work out this time. And I think we're going to get into that in the second question as well.
Thanks for your review. Yes, the second question is more about the reasons France victory. And I'm here, I'm based in Rome, in Italy. I had the opportunity to, you know, to watch different TV program, to read different articles in Italian, in English, or other languages. And, you know, they suggest different reasons why Trump won the election. They say, for instance, was gender issues, because Kamala Harris, of course, is a woman, and the previous times that Trump won was against Hillary Clinton. Also, the fact that the Democrats, you know, they support the Ukraine conflict, the Ukraine and the Ukraine conflict against Russia, sending money, and people are more concerned about economy, unemployment. So tell us your idea.
Because like you said, there have been lots of various factors that people have spoken about. So, you know, people are scrambling for a reason as to why this happened, because again, not only Trump, but the Republicans in general just completely swept this election. So people are kind of trying to pick up the pieces, trying to find as many different reasons as possible to understand what could have it possibly been. Like you said, some people say it's because Americans no longer want to continue to support Ukraine. And some people say that it's because Kamala Harris is a woman and Kamala Harris is a woman of color. And other people say it's a matter of reproductive issues and that Americans don't want a president who would be, quote unquote, extreme on reproductive issues and would try to implement an executive order making abortion legal in all 50 states. But like I said, I don't believe that was the fact of the matter. And the reason I say that is just because if we look at the numbers, Trump only gained, in comparison to the number of votes that Trump earned in 2020, he did not gain many more votes than he gained in the 2020 election, which he lost compared to Biden. However, Kamala, let's say Harris, gained millions less votes than Biden did in the 2020 election. So it's not that that many more people showed up for Trump or showed up for the Republicans. It's the fact that fewer people showed up for the Democrats this time around. Not even because their votes went to third party, but just because fewer people showed up for the Democrats. And again, I say this is because they did not have an inspiring enough platform. Yes, people were a bit more concerned about the economy this time around, especially in terms of inflation. And I'm seeing that, at least where I am, especially with housing prices. But at the same time, the Democrats seemingly did not understand that people don't necessarily want to, quote unquote, the truth. People did not necessarily want to a return to the way things were. They did not necessarily want just an alternative to Trump. They wanted somebody who could, let's say, appeal to their emotions, which Trump did very well, which I think Vance did very well. I was actually on a podcast the other day with someone who worked with the Obama campaign back in 2008. And even just back in 2008, which is not that long ago, their strategy was to point out all the times that his adversary, John McCain, said something untrue. And if John McCain said something untrue, that immediately disqualified him with a lot of people. We're now at a point in time where you don't have to say something true. People don't care if something is true or not. And I think J.D. Vance, for example, understood that when Trump, during the debate, said that in Springfield, Ohio, Haitians with temporary protected status were eating the pets of the residents in Springfield. Vance said, I don't care if it's true or not. You know, we just got to take care of this. We just got to take care of this, this problem. And he understood that. He knew that people care more about their emotions being appealed to than truth being told and then a return to the past. So ultimately, the Democrats really didn't manage to reach out to their typical voters in this case, because they didn't appeal to people on an emotional level. That's how I interpret it.
Thanks for this interesting point of view. So usually intelligence after all the information, there is the famous so what. So this means that what do you expect now after Trump won? For instance, we wrote a report regarding the possible impact of Trump's presidencies in Eurasia, and we try to focus more on Ukraine conflict, Middle Eastern military escalation, Taiwan issues. But what do you expect now from Trump, both in domestic and foreign policy?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about Trump. That's his quality. Even if we were talking about a predictable candidate, it's hard to tell the future, but we're talking about somebody who is an unpredictable candidate. For example, I think on the domestic level, not just referring to Trump, but like I was saying here in the state of Ohio, we ended up electing a lot of candidates who are not middle of the road, or at least who do not put themselves to seem that way. Let's put it that way. We ended up electing a lot of people who, rather than, like I said, rather than appealing to the idea of being one of the people, people over politics, who more than anything else wanted to reach out to an emotional appeal. And I spoke about this in the other podcasts that I was in the webinar that I participated in the other day, that Americans at the moment, it's Spain, Sweden, USA, and South Africa that are the most polarized states in the world at the moment. But the difference between the polarization in, for example, Spain and Sweden is that Spain and Sweden are polarized from a policy perspective. So the they tend to not agree, the left and the right tend to not agree on basically almost anything in terms of policy. Americans, interestingly enough, agree on a lot more than they think. Their political opinions are actually very similar. If you take a Democrat and a Republican and you put them together and have them discuss something, they're going to agree on a lot more than they disagree on, but they're emotionally polarized. They see a Republican sees the Democrat as being extreme, whereas they're actually very middle. Most people are middle of the road, but there's this emotional polarization. And I think we saw that also in the results of the Senate and House elections, both at the state level and at the federal level, that people who tended to appeal to the idea of the other side being extreme or extremist were the ones being elected. So I think, unfortunately, what we're going to continue to see is a lot more infighting at the government level. I can't say that there will be gridlock, because obviously the Republicans have taken the House, the Senate, and most of the Supreme Court has been appointed by conservative presidents. So I don't think there's going to be gridlock, but I do find that there's probably going to be a lot more infighting on the domestic level. And so maybe, you know, the government will get more done as opposed to the current 50-50 balance that we have now. But at the same time, there will probably be a lot more emotional infighting. I would love to hear your perspectives on your predictions for Central Asia, because obviously, and in the Middle East, because obviously that's your area. What I can already say and what I can see about Europe is I'm seeing a lot less a lot fewer accusations by Europeans of Americans turning towards isolationism. I think Europeans now, especially with statements like Macron, like there's a world of carnivores and omnivores, and we need to become omnivores if we want to survive. For example, the European Union was mandated to create an intelligence agency of its own. You know, so I believe that the European Union realizes no matter what the presidential election result would have been, whether it had been Harris or Trump, they kind of realize that they're becoming less relevant towards the United States in regards to the United States, that the United States is inevitably turning more attention towards the Indo-Pacific region. So that's what I can say about the European side of things. There are other actors such as India, for example, which will probably be open to working with the Trump administration, who aren't necessarily, despite Kamala Harris's Indian heritage and, you know, the the attempt to appeal to soft power through her heritage. I do believe that the Trump administration will try to begin to pivot towards actors such as India in, let's say, this this quote unquote new world order. I'll stop there because I know you want to say something.
No. Thank you. It was interesting what you were saying. So I can agree with you. Asia Pacific will be the core also because all the Taiwan issues, the confrontation with China. Let's say that if we move more to the European side, there is a big issue, which is Ukraine, you know. And apart what Trump said, what was interesting was like the Kremlin's reaction, which say that, they are conducting what they call special military operations and they are committed to reach their goals. So according to my view interpretation, it will be easier for the United States under the Democrats, mm-hmm. because at least the Democrats, they could have followed always the same strategies regarding Ukraine and adapt. But now Trump, who say that, as a president, he could have managed this conflict easily. And now mm-hmm. the main problem is that he should give something really important to the Russians, because the Russians can continue this conflict without any problems. And in the last 2 months, they gained a lot of territory and military victories on the ground in eastern Ukraine. So now the first problem of Trump will be, try to reach a deal, try to sit at the table with the Russians and provide something to the Russian. And the main question will be, Ukraine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think Ukraine obviously is a sort of, I can see that maybe, they're nervous about this administration because Trump promised that if he becomes president, he's going to end the war in Ukraine within 24 hours of the beginning of his presidency. Now, we can interpret that however we want. Basically, what does it mean to end the war? That he's going to sit down with Putin and come up with a plan for Ukraine himself. A similar thing happened during the Doha Accords, for example, regarding Afghanistan. That deal was reached mainly between the NATO representatives, US government, and representatives of the Taliban, without really creating a space for the voices from the Afghan government. So it's quite possible that that might be recreated in the situation of Ukraine. It is a possibility. He's also known to have engaged in a very transactional form of diplomacy, which I think we can see that with the Abraham Accords. I also mentioned this in our other podcast, Geopoliticami, for Minter Group and Mondo Internazionale, that, for example, back in 2020, as a lame duck, as we say, during his last months of his presidency, he decided to recognize what we would call the Western Sahara as Moroccan territory. And Morocco has always denied that was done in exchange for their accession to the Abraham Accords. However, given the timing, some people have speculated that was the situation. So he's known to have engaged in a very transactional form of diplomacy, which some people might argue has brought more peace to the world, more peace in the Middle East, and may bring about a more peaceful world. Now, are those people sort of just trying to find the silver lining? Quite possibly. That's basically one of his hallmarks forms of diplomacy was very transactional.
Yeah, I can agree with you also. Well, regarding Ukraine, there is the big question mark also, because now it depends on Putin's and the Kremlin also, what they want to do. If they want to reach a certain agreement or if they are fine with what they reach on the battleground. The main question will be if after Afghanistan, after Iraq, Ukraine can become a sort of, a problem for the USA, for the United States, because if we look what happened in Afghanistan, also then they were, after 20 years of spending a lot of money, spending human resources, then how it ended, was, you know, a negative. It was really negative for the United States. And look now, Ukraine. Of course, Trump can blame the Democrats, Biden, and Kamala Harris for Ukraine conflict. But at the end of the day, he's always representing the United States.
Yeah.
So my question will be, what is interesting is that when it, I was in Ukraine in August 2021 with Sylvia Boltuk, and at that time, on August, there was the, you know, the hand of the USA troops withdrawal from Afghanistan. If you remember, the Taliban took power in Kabul, and the Kiev, I don't remember if it was the Kiev Independent or the Kiev Post, which media was, but wrote something regarding what happened. Say probably the Ukrainians should learn the lesson from what happened in Afghanistan. And 6 months later, we had the Ukraine, the beginning of the Ukraine conflict. So now the main question is, okay, he can adopt a different strategy, different diplomacy, but how can we cancel or delay 2 years of narrative regarding Ukraine?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is interesting. I wasn't even aware of, obviously, because I am not usually reading Ukrainian sources, but that is really interesting that they also made the parallel between Afghanistan, or they made the connection between Afghanistan and Ukraine already at that point. So I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, it's all kind of up in the air. Nobody really knows what to expect right now. Obviously, some people are nervous for their jobs, especially some people working in some federal administrations that I know of, like USAID, Department of State. But at the same time, we really, I mean, Trump in itself, they're nervous, but we can all acknowledge that Trump in himself is an unpredictable candidate. And I think that's a part of the fact that the uneasiness is that we don't really know what kind of strategy he's going to adopt in terms of geopolitics. So basically, my predictions and what I think for the future are based on some of his past moves that I know about, but he's also an unpredictable candidate, you know? So we can't really know much about what to expect, but we can speculate, in my opinion.
Yeah, speculation is probably one of the best things that people in geopolitics can do. I also like in
I know it's a bad word, but what are we gonna do? Like
no, okay, because but we can just try to build some future scenarios and try to adapt according to Trump's and USC administration's moves, but I can agree with you. So thanks again for being with us with this podcast and sharing your experience as USA citizens and also as an expert regarding this election. I would like to remind you that your podcast also, which is recorded by Mundo Internacional Mentor Group, if I'm not mistaken, right?
So, yeah, Geopolitica Me. So we'll talk about these types of topics and a lot more, but it's available on our Instagram and website. So yeah.
Okay, thanks. And for our followers, I would like just to remind that on December 14th, we will have an online course in open source intelligence for Russian speaking world. This means that you don't have to speak Russian, but we are going to teach you the strategies and provide you the tools and the vocabulary to research information and analyze sources from the Russian-speaking world. This means Russia and the whole post-Soviet space. So thanks again, Catherine, for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, and I wish a good day to our followers and listeners, and I hope to have you again in the near future to discuss USA foreign policies in Eurasia. Thanks. Bye-bye.